You have two.
His name's Chase.
Wait a minute, you have two psychologists here.
Well,
all right. Oh, this is something new now.
He says, I'm your sweat audience as well.
Okay. According to Steve Gross, the recordings are coming out very good. So whatever we're doing, whatever you're doing, you're doing right. You read the reviews of your great uncles?
I read some of them.
Yeah. And yet you have to know, his high schools play a role. The kids who go there and remain very solid, it's kids who need that type of environment. You know, open. No coercion. All right, I don't know. I would, when I read all these books, Unorthodox by Deborah Feldman, Your World, I cry because if she had been my student, I think we could have helped her. Understand? Then, I don't know, maybe I get a girl who's closed-minded, she hears my open-mindedness, she runs away from Yiddishkeit, I don't know. The latter hasn't happened, but in theory, anything is possible. Okay, ready to roll. Today is Sunday, January. By the way, the kollel is smaller the last few years. Why you with its cutbacks? If you notice, you walk through the building, it should have been painted 2 years ago. So you get the message. And we're out of sight. In other words, although we're part of YU, we're the least important part. I think we're the most important, but I've been overruled by the president and all the board of directors who I know. They all view us as perhaps a necessity, but it's like a mother-in-law. You follow? You got to have a mother-in-law, but at times you're not that happy about it. All right. Today is Sunday, January 6, 2013, if I'm not mistaken, and I want to say hello to the students in front of me, the guests, and those listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish world. Now, we're dealing with the problem of how to paskin halacha, and last week we finished up two lectures on our lack of self-confidence, our generation. What can I tell you? Im harishonim kamalachim anu b'nei tumuta, and harishonim b'nei tumuta anu chamorim v'afil lo kechamor shel Pinchas ben Yair. By the way, Rav Asher Weiss deals with that in his new sefer. I went through the Minchat Asher, Shalat and Shuvat Chelik Aleph. By the way, the first printing just totally sold out. I got the last two copies through my chaver, Sam Dershowitz, for Rabbi Bednash Thursday night, totally sold out. So he deals with that Gemara as well. Where does he come to that sugya? Because from Munsi, where that Menuvel went and sold Nevelis and Trefis, remember the chickens packaged differently. He lives in my neighborhood today. It's unbelievable. No, but in my shul, he can't get Naliyah. It's a whole story. It's not for now. But I told him until he does tshuva. What's tshuva? He has to pay back the millions of dollars that people had to throw out ovens and dishes and kashering and the labor and the heartache. Then you can talk about tshuva, but if you don't pay back the money, how can you do tshuva? So he deals with whether those who ate the chickens, and I want to tell you, I was at a wedding there. As a matter of fact, it was Avery Joel's wedding. And I can tell you that Malk and I ordered fish, because by the time they got to the main course, it was like 10 o'clock at night, American style, which is now conquering Israel as well, unfortunately. So I ordered fish, so b'dieved, I don't know what could have been an Eina Ben Yomo or Klee. But he says from that Gemara, you see that a chamar, even Kapinchas ben Yair's chamar, didn't eat treif. The fact that we ate treif shows we're lacking, and he gives the advice that they should be geiser yom tanit. So, but how does it affect us here? Because as we said, who can paskin? Who has courage? Who knows something? And it's not Aaron Rakefet raising this question. Rav Moshe Feinstein raises this question, but this is life. Life has to go on. And Ein L'dayin Hashem Avroat Yiftach B'doro K'Shmul B'doro. And we're the ones alive today. And this was that first basic cloud that we saw from the Rishonim, Halacha Kabatra'i. And as I showed you last week, even if it's a yachid against the Rabbim, the Yad Malachi says, you can paskin as the like the Yachid, because he's the last one. Now, then we ended off the class with the Rama. Ephraim, Yashakayach, you'll see tomorrow, I incorporated, I checked it out, and I'll show you why I don't accept it at face value, but it's fascinating just to see the theory, but that's for tomorrow. Why, and Halacha Kabatra'i, beginning with Abaye V'Rava. Why with the beginning with Abaye V'Rava? So I told you, I don't know if it's my theory, I heard the theory in graduate school, but there's no question that once they set the calendar and the smicha hamakorit, the original smicha, comes to an end, there's no question this is a real drop in the dorot. So to say, before Abaye and Rava, we have to stand in awe. The Mishnah, perhaps the first Amorayim, but after Abaye and Rava, it's a downhill slide. And halacha kabatra'i. So then the Rama says, and that's the way we ended off the class, and this Rama is going to occupy our minds for the rest of the Shayur, and time allowing, which I think we'll reach, Cleveland will star in today's class. So you see, your being here, it's unbelievable. Dashkacha prate. So the Choshen Mishpat, Chaf Hei, and at the end of Sif Katan Bet in the Rama, that when do we say halacha kabatra'i? But only when the achronim saw the rishonim. Then you can use the seichel that God gave you, and in our generation you have the paskin. But what about avolim nimtza? Nimtza lafamim tshuva gon. V'lo ala zichrono al seifa. V'nimtzu achedim chokim alav. Ein tzrichim l'chsol kidivrei achronim. She'efsha shelo yadu divrei hagon v'yichave shamiyalehu hadrelehu. And this Rama has given birth, I wouldn't say much, tens of thousands of pages of rabbinic writing, of scholarly writing, of endless publications. And look what the Rama is saying, that halacha kabatra'i is only if the later ones saw the earlier ones. But if you find a Ketav Yad from a Gaon that no one knew, and it shows you that even in the time of the Rama is basically quoting the Marik, he's quoting earlier sources, people knew that they're Ketav Yad that we don't have. And all of you know that we had here in class last year when we spoke about the Rambam on the Hilchat Ishut, Isha Niknei B'Shlosha Derachim, Kesef Shtabia, and what did the Rambam really write? Are they all from the Torah? One of them, he seems to indicate Kesef is different than Shtah, different than Bia, Divrei Kabbalah. Did he change his mind? It's a terrific sugya. And remember, I got correspondence that people went into the Vatican and saw an original manuscript, and the Rambam did according to the manuscript, Rabbi Avraham is, I don't, you help me out, Rabbi Avraham, I believe,
Rabbi
was correct. Yeah, I understand. That the Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam was correct, that's the manuscript. Now, until today, I can't accept it, for one simple reason. If people really saw that manuscript, it should have been screaming at us from all the rabbinic journals, from tradition, from Chakira, from Torah Mada Journal, from Hapardes, from any rabbinic journal you'll name. And yet, the issue hangs fire. And in the Frankel Rambam, he doesn't quote any such source. So I don't know. You know, people can begin rumors, and if a rumor is spread, then I asked, remember I wrote back, the person involved is very ill today, so I can't correspond with him. He should only have a foolish lema. But I put up a shut up. No one, everyone was just repeating a story. It may be correct, but it's hard for me to accept it until I see it. But if this is the case, what the Rama is saying, if taken logically, it means in many of the issues that we deal with halachically, what we're doing may only be transitory. It could be that the halacha will change. We're going to find manuscripts. I can give you a simple example. This is a shaila that comes up all the time in Israel. parking lots. Jerusalem, you all know, is like every other city in the world today. I dream of once when I came in Aliyah 44 years ago, you could shoot through from here to Ramat Eshkol, maybe in 4 or 5 minutes. There were no cars, there were no traffic lights. It was a different world. Today, in the heart of Jerusalem, tremendous problems with parking. So anyone who lives in a house which has a parking lot, and according to a law, which I don't know if it is enforced or not enforced after the Six-Day War, they required every new building to have parking facilities. So we have in my building parking facilities. We had to put up a gate because every Tom, Dick, and Harry was coming in and parking in places that were reserved for the people who live there. No, if you walk past that gate on Shabbos, a human being walking past, nothing to do with driving, you activate the light. I'll give you the sensor, whatever you want to call it. You can do it. You can see yourself. If you walk past during the week and you're looking, you'll see the red light goes on. If you want to walk home from the Kotel, I walk home from the Kotel, so I'm walking up Rehov Agron. You go past the American Consul. So there's a video camera recording you as you walk past. Are you allowed or not allowed? And of course, this gets involved with what malacha are you doing, but you're activating the camera, psikreshev, so many people are machmir. My own practice, I have to tell you, is that in my own house, in the parking lot, I do not walk past the electric gate. I walk a little bit around, takes me another let's say 15 seconds, but I walk out of my way. Walking home from the Kotel, I will not walk out of my way because of Arab terrorists. You understand? If they're going to burn down America, so they sign gesund. That's what America has to understand what we're up against. I will not cross the street. I will walk past normally. Yesh ami l'smoch. But mind you, they did find the manuscript of Miri where he's much more makil than other Rishonim, Sikresha, the Lonichale, etc., etc., etc. So you see, how does it affect the Psak? And this has many, many implications. The first time I ever saw this, I can just share with you an incident, if you look into Shonim B'tzidim B'Halacha, which I owe a great debt to, because I was a kid. And, you know, I was a kid learning, I wanted to learn more, and I knew, I'm still a kid in that respect. I knew you never can finish learning. The Rav always said, a Talmud Chacham. Why a Talmud Chacham? It's contradictory. If you're a Chacham, you're not a Talmud. And if you're a Talmud, you're not a Chacham. But the Rav said, you always have to strive to be a Chacham. But if you think you achieved it, you're absolutely wrong. You always have to live in two worlds, a Talmud Chacham. So already in high school, the first edition of the Shonim B'Tzidim B'Halacha came out by Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Breun. A survivor lived in Williamsburg, was an independent posek, and he summarized on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch many of the tshuvot on the topics the Kitzur talks about. So one of the tshuvot was fascinating because I remember a similar incident or the incident he talks about. What was it? Walking home from in the Bronx from Shul on Shabbos, there was a car crash. Car crash? No, a kid sees a car crash. It's exciting. Everyone gathered to see what happened. Within minutes, there was a police car. Within minutes, there were photographers, reporters from the Daily News or whatever, Daily Snut, whatever you want to call it. And they're taking pictures on Shabbos of the cars crashed, and the crowd is in the background. So here, a guy is taking your picture on Shabbos. So, all right, I didn't ask any questions. I mean, what did it have to do with me? But midasek, whatever you want to say, this is not really a difficult shaila. But people asked the shaila. I don't know if it was the car crash I saw, or maybe in Brooklyn. It seems more likely something happened in Brooklyn, because in the Bronx, there was one, with all due respect to Stephen myself, from Jews were few and far between. But Brooklyn already, by the 1950s, had a kehillah. So you see, does discovering the Me'iri affect halacha l'maisa? And remember, everything we said until now, everything we took for granted, whatever the Ramah says, whatever the Magen Avraham says, whatever the Taz says, whatever the Mishnah Brura says, whatever the Pitkei Tshuva says, the Sharei Tshuva, but everything we took for granted, they saw the earlier manuscripts. Suddenly a new manuscript pops up. According to the Ramah, it's a very challenging thought that the Yiddishkeit we live is tenuous, it's temporary. More manuscripts will be discovered. Ein l'dava self. Okay. So now I want to show you, and again, I know in advance there has so much that has been written on this topic. Rabbi Bleich, I think he once wrote an essay in a tradition, as I recall, Rabbi David Bleich, who knows everything. I don't have to tell you, some people know absolutely everything. It's inspiring and frightening to see how much they know. So he wrote, it must be 30, 40 pages, sources on this topic. But when all is said and done, the most famous source is the Chazonish. And any contemporary discussion centers around the Chazonish. Now, a few words in an order about the Rav Ram Yeshaya Karelitz, the Chazonish. First of all, a doctorate plus just came out a year and a half ago, published by Magnus Press, somehow Kadosh Law School's involved, Benjamin Brown, if I'm pronouncing his name. I don't know him. I don't recall ever meeting him. All I remember, there was a Yankee third baseman by the name of Brown who went on to become a cardiologist. Could you imagine a baseball player who went on, and he lost time playing because he was in medical school. Occasionally he had to take off, take exams, and a cardiologist, that's beyond words, a baseball player. Do you think of baseball players today? Cardiologist, Tate de Satre. So he did a doctorate at Hebrew U on the Chazonish. Gentlemen, I have to tell you, it's beyond words, the volume. I can't even pick it up. It's like 800, 900 pages. They didn't publish two volumes, which is sad. I know why they didn't publish. It's the same reason originally the manuscript on Washington to Washington was well over 600 published pages, and I had hoped they would publish two volumes. Instead, they cut out material, and it winds up one volume. Why? Because the main cost in publishing is binding. And if they don't have to bind two volumes today, it's much cheaper. A book on the Chazonish, how many people are going to buy it? It's a fabulous volume. I'm well into it. He has the biography. He has the Chazonish as a leader of the Haredi world. He has the Chazonish in his thinking halachically. He has arguments between the Chazonish and Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. It's a fabulous, fabulous piece of work. Now, why was the Chazonish? Who are we talking about? See, what's amazing about the Chazonish, he was totally anonymous. This man never learned in a real yeshiva. His father was a big Talmud Chacham. His whole family were Talmidei Chachamim. His first cousin, knew Talmud's first cousin, was Reb Shaul Lieberman, Professor Lieberman. His mother and Reb Shaul's mother were sisters. So this was the background. And he was quiet. He married. All right, there's a lot about the marriage in the book, which you'll read. I don't want to repeat it. It's fascinating that it's been published, and you can understand why the Haredim are not going to jump for joy with this doctorate on the Chazonish, but it seems to be correct in what he says. So he married, and his wife ran a store and supported him, and Nechbala Kalim. Then they lived near Vilna, and what could you do? Occasionally, he had at Gedaf Rednin Lernin, he had a talk in learning with Reb Chaim Moisek Grzynski. Now, Reb Chaim Moisek was very, very unique. For a Luzhin graduate, he probably was one of the last ones to have the ability to paskin. And I have Reb Aaron Soloveitchik once told me about Reb Chaim Moisek that it's not that he knew more than anyone else. He said what was unique about Reb Chaim Moisek was that he knew exactly where to go for, where to find the tshuva, where to apply it. He was unbelievable with that ability to paskin like Reb Yitzchok Chanan Spector. So Reb Chaim Moisek, who held it was the Av Beit Din of Vilna, He sees the Chazon Ish. He was blown away by the man's learning. And Reb Chaim Moshe made him world famous. The Chazon Ish refused to accept any public responsibility. And he goes on Aliyah. And Reb Chaim Moshe constantly corresponds with him. It was a very unique relationship. When he comes on Aliyah, no one knew who he was. Karelitz, Avraham Yeshaya, Ish. First volumes were published anonymously. I don't know if you're aware of that. Yehudi, you follow? He didn't write his name on the first volumes. He used pseudonyms. It's unbelievable. And slowly but surely, the Chazon Ish becomes the dominant religious personality on the Israeli scene. In other words, everyone recognized in him, even, you know, those that didn't share his total hashkafa. And by the way, his hashkafa was not the hashkafa of the Chazon Ish today. If I would put it into terminology that you hear on the streets, he was the epitome of Polei Agudat Yisrael. Follow me? He was not Mizrahi, but he was not the Agudat Yisrael of today. He was the Chazon Ish. Now, Sfarim started to come out, particularly once he came to Israel. People worked with him, people edited. See, this is the greatness. Rav Asher Weiss can put out so many Sfarim. He has a crew around him that works with his Shayurim, putting it out, Hebrew, English. It's a great blessing for a Talmud Chacham, and it's like Rav Ovadia Yosef. His children work with him. He has so the Chazon Ish. Endless from came out. His brother-in-law, Reb Shmuel Greinemann, had this ability to put everything into print. And then I remember a little volume came out, Igrot Chazon Ish. I was a kid in high school. You can't imagine how happy we were. And the Chazon Ish had a Hebrew second to none. I will venture and go out on a limb and say, his command of modern Hebrew was better than Chaim Nachman Bialik. No two ways about it. You read Emunah U'Bitachon, that was also a sefer that came out, if I recall, the 50s. What ability. So I'm now quoting to you from Kovetz Igeret, Kovetz Igrot, Maran Baal Chazon Ish, and it tells you, Yatsa Al Yedei HaRab Shmuel Greinemann, his brother-in-law, Rav Greinemann, put it all. By the way, another brother-in-law was the Steipler. The Steipler was also a brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish. I mean, you're dealing here with a very, very unique family. My travel agent is a granddaughter or a great-granddaughter of Rav Shmuel Greinemann. So, anyone with that yichus, it's wow. So you look into the first volume of his letters, and it's the most famous letter he ever wrote. Lamed Bet. Igeret Lamed Bet. You can remember Lamed Bet very easily. Lev, our heart. You follow me? Daniel, Lamed Bet, Lev. Beautiful. Okay. Now, we don't know who he wrote the letter to. And evidently, this person had published an article, and here you get caught in the tremendous conflict that's going to occupy us today and next week. Maybe when I have the press conference, I may relate to it too, because I saw in the questions you asked Rabbi Bednash, and what's the last name of the other Rebbe? Was it Weider? What's his first name? Jeremy Weider. I met him for the first time in Los Angeles. We were scholar in residence in two neighboring shuls. I want to tell you, he's the handsomest Rosh Yeshiva I've ever met in my life. That much I will tell you. Probably a good basketball player. So you see, you asked this very question. Those of you that have heard Rakefet's Shayurim years ago on the history of Torah in modern times, so you remember I devoted a lot of time to a new development in Torah scholarship called Chochmat Yisrael, Wissenschaft des Judentum, which we popularly translate as the science of Jewish scholarship or scientific Jewish scholarship. I've written about it in Revel. I have a whole chapter on it. In Washington, I have what I consider a very, very important chapter because I produce a letter there from Rabbi Belkin to Rabbi Revel, which, very to me, it's very important. It catches the essence of the issue. Now, Chachmat Yisrael, is it Talmud Torah? Absolutely. When you open up, for the sake of argument, Professor Liebman's work on the Tosefta, it's scientific Jewish scholarship. Look at the footnotes. Look what Professor Liebman does with Greek words, Latin words, Aramaic literature. It's scientific. It's historic. It's chronologically sound. Is it Talmud Torah? Absolutely. Open up the Frankel Rambam and you see all the variant readings. New to put those variant readings together. Is it Talmud Torah? Absolutely. And yet there is a difference. Someone who engages in Talmud Torah, if you remember my lectures on the Hasidic world, a chassid would say, Hineni muchan muzuman l'mol Torah, and he would say, Kavanot. And believe me, your Rebbe, if you went to Talmudical Academy and you had Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, MTA, which is getting such bad publicity today, so Rabbi Yeruchim would go hysterical. You know, what are you studying, a Tosfos like you study biology? What are you studying, a Rashba like you study chemistry? And right, this is a very delicate question that all of us have to face if we engage in the world of scientific Jewish scholarship. There's a fallout to this in Washington. I described to you my quandary with writing about a critique of Rabbi Silver, Trudy Wise Rosemary, and who critiqued orthodoxy, left orthodoxy, enmity towards orthodoxy. And do you write about it or don't you write about it? Or how do you write about it? Do you maledict or don't maledict? I tell you what Rabbi Lamb told me, what the Blazer Silver's granddaughter did that hit me over the head. All right, I did what I did and I explained myself. But this is a very delicate issue. Now, evidently, he is writing to someone who is a Talmud of his, who has gotten involved in Chochmat Yisrael. And here you have to remember, when Hebrew University opened, one of their main faculties was Chochmat Yisrael. It's not like today. Today in Chochmat Yisrael and Hebrew University, you have to light candles and go into corners and look under tables to find students who are studying Chochmat Yisrael. And there are reasons why. Number one, the world has gone Haredi. You showed me my interview, whatever I said then. Two, the Yeshivat Chesda. What, you don't have a division, the Yeshivat Chesda, and not turning out Chochmat Yisrael, edited editions of Rishonim, edited editions, the Sfat Emet, an edited edition, just came out from, I believe it's from Chaim Kedrukman's Yeshiva. Check it out. But what, the Gush doesn't have the Herzog, whatever it's called. Then, if you really want serious Chochmat Yisrael, could be you're going to choose Bar Ilan because it's a firmer environment. I have a granddaughter-in-law who has 2 degrees from Bar Ilan, okay? But I she was accepted, a very bright girl. She was with big yichas. And Unzdorf, I tell the Satma, my Einikel is married to Rav Unzdorf is an Einikel, okay? So big yichas. But she was accepted to Hebrew. But why did she choose Bar Ilan? Because she felt the environment would be better. So you see today, Hebrew U may have some very big people in Chochmat Yisrael, but you're not producing students. It's a real problem for them. Because the raison d'etre, Hebrew University, part of it was, you know, the famous machlokes, did Rav Kook say it or didn't he say it? What did he mean when he said it? Yimitzion teitzei Torah, deva Hashem, the Yerushalayim. You're familiar with this? This is the Haredim, hit away at Rav Kook. Rav Kook meant it in the sense, everything we do ultimately has to lead to Yimitzion. He didn't say, from the Hebrew you alone, teitzei Torah. But
Salah Nahor wrote a book about it when God Becomes History. He said that Rav Kook was only referring to the yeshiva.
No. Besides, he's my Talmud. You're telling me about Richie Nayer, who put him on his feet? Come on. I understand. I'm well aware of the machlokes. But when I read this letter, and it's a very important letter, I intuitively thought, who could the Chazon Ish be writing to? Now, when he came to Israel, he didn't teach in a yeshiva. Again, it's the same story. He sat at Gizitzin and Avinkel. I don't know how to say this in English or Hebrew. Who yeshav bepina bodedet. totally separate from the wife that tried to support him. He was now, she no longer worked. He was supporting himself by the sale of his books. The family took care of it. I say some wealthy man also contributed something. So he's sitting, but what could you do? Students come into you, students talk with you. So he picked up some very bright students. What I had heard as rumors already in America, they were two brothers. Joey, Yehuda brothers. Recognize the name? Professor Tzvi Yehuda. Okay. So I am positive, and I'll bring some confirmation later, that this letter was written to either Tzvi or his other brother. I don't recall the brother's name. The brother is dead many years. Lo Aleinu, the other brother came back to Israel and lost a son in Milchemet Shlom HaGalil, 1982. Lost a son, Lo Aleinu. I taught his daughter, and I taught the daughter, Tamar Yehuda, Tamar Gesundheit. She's married to a nene called the Rabbi Yaakov Gesundheit, the Rav, the Kehilat Chet. This was Chemdat Shlomo. This was the Rav of Warsaw, who was an Adam Gadol Mal. The Rav held Rabbi Yaakov Gesundheit in awe. She's married to a direct descendant. Her name is Gesundheit. I taught Professor Tzvi Yehuda's daughter, and she's, I believe, a big psychologist. She's very active in the Chovevei Torah. She's so her father, and who I got to know, he was the Talmud of the Chazon Nish, who went to the university. Once he went to the university, he was exposed to Chachmat Yisrael, and he evidently published an article, and the Chazon Nish hits him over the head. Hine anan yatmei de yatmei. We are orphans. Ein lanu laros divrei rishonim. Who are we to contradict, to nullify divrei rishonim? And who are we to say that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, the Rosh, the Torah, didn't know the correct answer? For emet kiblu bimeni sha'ani yodeya yotcheh mehem. Now let me tell you something, Steve. This happened to me. I'm going to take you back 52 years. Every syllable correct, but it brings the Chazon Ish to life. Why you places me in the Lower Marian Synagogue. I was the second rabbi, a new synagogue. Whatever, read about it in Washington. I'm lucky I'm alive, okay?
I remember.
Okay, say that.
The wine?
Yeah, forget about the wine. So, not the wine, something entirely different. One of my nice balabatim was Professor Moshe Greenberg, Zichrono Livracha. Moshe Greenberg's father was the vice provost of the seminary. And Moshe Greenberg, who was a genius, had ordination from the seminary, had a PhD from the U of P, and he was appointed full professor. I think he was the youngest full professor ever appointed in the U of P's history. He was in his mid-20s. Later, he comes to Aliyah, a little after we came, and he was professor at Hebrew U. Unfortunately, he died relatively young, a debilitating disease. So, one time I'm speaking between Mincha Maariv, and we raise this very problem. And we get involved in a tremendous dialogue, myself and Moshe. And he says to me, Bezeh HaLashon, we are bigger than the Vilna Gaon today. I said, what are you talking about? We have manuscripts. We have a scientific approach. We can decipher what is correct among the Rishonim. And he absolutely said these words and believed them. B'lev v'nefesh. I have to tell you, in his own practice, he was totally observant. I don't know whether I could call him orthodox and as far as doctrine, the orthopraxy certainly was. Orthodox, if you know his theories on Chumash, it could be, I can't say he was orthodox. But he was a fascinating individual. And he said to me exactly what the Chazon Ish is quoting his Talmud or Talmidim as writing. Now, watch. The Yehuda brothers, and I don't know whether it's Tzvi or his brother, they were not stupid. These are very brilliant people. Tell me, can you bring a proof that they're correct, that we can argue with the Rush, the Rashba, the Tur, the Rishainim, the Gainim? Can you bring a proof? Can you bring a proof? Absolutely. They brought a proof. The Gra, Rebbe Eliyahu of Vilna, the Gaon. The places where he argues with Rishonim, with accepted practice, are in the tens, if not the hundreds. Right or wrong? The Gaon, his mind. The simplest example. How many matzot do you take Leil HaSeder? Simplest example. No, everyone takes three. I would imagine the Rav took two, like the Vilna Gaon. Right or wrong? The shuls, and you know, I raised questions on this, but it's not important now. What's important is all the shuls in Yerushalayim, the Ashkenazic shuls, do not lay in Leil Simchas Torah. And you ask them, why don't you lay Minei Kagra? No, every Jew grew up laying Simchas Torah 9. Remember as kids, it was so exciting.
Then
apples at the what? The apples with what they had, with the candy apples. Remember? Right. I mean, it was so exciting. Minei Kagra. The Shir Shalyom in Yerushalayim. You can blow your brains out if you don't get Torah Tidus before Pesach, before Sukkot. Every day the Shir Shalyom changes. It's not the Hayom Rishonim. Minei Kagra. When I was in Vilna, I took a picture of this. I have a picture of in the one shul that survived in Vilna, where Reb Chaim Moshe davened, it was right near his house, big shul, on the wall was the list of the Shir Shalyom for all the Chagim, Lefi Minhag Moreinu Rabbeinu Hagra. You follow? In the shul, right on the wall. I saw it in 69. So, I mean, the Vilna Gaon, you can go up and down what he changed, what he did. And he argued with the Shulchan Aruch, he argued with the Ramah. And I don't tell you, the Maaser Rav. Look into the Maaser Rav and go step by step, law by law. And this is what they evidently wrote about, that just as the Gra could come out with a new Jewish lifestyle, we can come out with a new Jewish lifestyle. And we have manuscripts, scientific, we have discoveries. And the Chazon Ish slaps their face. See, part of the text is missing. This is Haredi editing. Whenever they issue a letter, you'll see that in Brown's work on the Chazon Ish. You can, and I had experience. I had a whole machlokes once with the family where they wouldn't, you know, with the letter of the Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv, 1935. And the name is missing. I don't want to go into detail now. I recorded it many years ago in the color, but it's quite a story. And I'm an eyewitness to the Rav saying, put my name in. Put my name in. Harav, Yosef, Dov, Halevi, Soloveitchik. There were like five dots there. And it turns out, according to the family, the Rav didn't know what he was talking about. It's a different name. So I wanted to see. Show me. Is there? No. It's in a safe. Will not make it available to the world. Right, that's very sad, because scholarship cannot go further if you will not make it available. So here we're missing, there are three dots here. Then he begins, let's go back to the Sefer HaGra. You relate to the Gra, L'shitat HaGra, you relate to the Gra with a certain coldness, scientifically. Anu mitjachasim l'HaGra. Bishura Shom Moshe Rabbeinu, Alav Hashalom, Ezra Alav Hashalom, Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Rabashi, HaRambam, HaGra, Shenitkala Torah Yado, Kekadosh Me'utad Lekach, שחייר במה שלא חווה עד שבא ונטל חלקו, והוא נחשב כאחד מן הראשונים. Now these are very powerful words. How would I explain it? You've studied Darwin's theory of evolution. So there's a certain word that comes along, a throwback. Understand? Sometimes in a later generation, a variation shows up that's a throwback to something that was developing many years before. What the Chazon Ish is saying here, and this opens up an absolute Pandora's box. But let me first explain the Chazon Ish. The generations go down. Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, who had a good sense of humor, constantly would say, "Ich bin ich de Zeda, I'm not like my grandfather. He had certain chumras, I'm not on that level." You know, he would constantly refer to it. Nitma'atu hadarat. I don't do everything my grandfather did. He was unique. Now, we all know the generations go down. This is built into the system. It's the famous conversation between Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and the head of the Histra Dirk Yeruchim Meshel, with a little guy named Aaron Rakefet sitting right across the aisle in that Elal plane. But look what the Chazon Ish says. Every once in a while, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a throwback to earlier generations. You want to know what a Rishon was like? Look at the Vilna Gaon. And if you look into the Hakdama of, I believe it's the one written by his children, to the Haggadah Hagra on the Shulchan Aruch, they tell a story that Talmidim of the Gra was saying, he's like an Amora. And the Gra said, and he heard them, called them to water, and said, Chas v'chalila, like one of the last of the Rishonim. But he himself said, he's like a Rishon. Now, if you view the Gra that way, a throwback, then you can understand why he could argue with the Rif, with the Rush. Certainly with the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama. You look at the Gra, Kriyadut, coldness, disassociation, scientific. The Gra, like a Rishon. Now, you know what's the danger in this theory? It's very simple. Oh, about the Gra, Shichmo Lamalo Mikola Am. Any of you Hasidim? Don't have to go further than Lubavitch. Ask a Hasid who the Rebbe was. No one like him. May, from the Rambam to the seventh Rebbe, no equal. Nope. Go to a Breslover. Rav Nachman. No soul equals Rav Nachman. And we go on and on. It's Endlich Machlokes. They know it all. They can do whatever they want. They can throw away everything that came before them. So this particular theory is very dangerous. You just saw it in print, David Hartman's new book. Exactly. He rips the rub apart in vulgar language. It's Rebbe. One of his Rebbeim. I don't want the Rav to get all the credit. I told you. Chaim Berlin, Lakewood, Rav Huttner, Rav Cutler, and then the Rav. One third of the problem is the Rav.
And then you have to continue. Yeshaya Leibowitz.
Yeshaya Leibowitz. Okay. Yeshaya Leibowitz. It's, if you take this attitude, a throwback? You're a throwback soon? No, what do they say? The Baal Shem Tov can change everything. Hitgalut, I mean, this is a very, you talk to Chassidim. Look, I have to tell you, I'm very happy that the Lubavitchers are such Rishoyim with their davening on Shabbos morning. It's beyond words. They don't begin before 9:30. All over you'll find 10 o'clock, 10:30. No, we finish Shalaylam. I'm finished davening in 10 minutes to 8. And I daven slowly, take my word for it. Ah, but why am I so happy? Because Shabbos afternoon, I caught a 1 o'clock mincha. I didn't daven. My children are not here now. That Shabbos, last Shabbos, this past Shabbos. So I went to my shul 1 o'clock, and the weather was bad. It was raining. I said to Malka, you know something? I worry we won't have a minyan. The shtiblach pull from the entire neighborhood, and I'm going to Old Rivka. And then I said, you know, there's a Chabad minyan in the side room. The founders of Old Rivka would be turning over in their graves if they know what's going on in the shul today. Aye, but by the time they finished the mizitz, the minlerin, the minmachkiddish, and a little lekach, and a story about the Rebbe, I come into shul 1:50. I was the only non-Chabad chassid in the shul at that moment. Place was mobbed, relatively, for mincha. A few other non-Chabadnikim joined me, but could you imagine? They finished davening, Ichveis, 11:30. You got to make Kiddush, a Shir and Tanya, Likutei Torah, a Maisa from the Sichat HaRebbe. Ah, the Drakefet gain out of it. But you see, there is a fear here. Where do you draw the line? The Chazon Ish takes the point of view that the Vilna Gaon, Labriyut, was a throwback to the Rishonim, Akedei Kach. And he says, and if this is the case, you can understand Latin Choleka Leyam Bakama Makomet Batokevu Vyoz, that the Vilna Gaon argues with the Rishonim with strength, with intensity. Gamal Arifa Harambam Hu Holeich. Umadregol, umadregato, beruach hakodesh, b'chasidut, ubegol, go dial to vuna tobi giato, bekiu tobi ina omek bekol atomet siya tabi adenu, e efsha klal etzayer et efshudatam. And you see, look at the way he describes the Gaon. We can't even understand it. His tzidkut, his chasidut, his prishut, his learning, his knowledge. Wow. And he's telling these students off. And he says, this is exactly what we would say about Rishonim. And we would not argue on them, because who are we? And you come along and you think you're like the Vilna Gaon and you could argue? Chas v'chalila. So this is one very important part of the letter. What I regret, and this is an open Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kelev Hamalakeit Min Hayam, that we have a Rebbe. How much do we learn from the Rebbe? When we sat before the Rav, what did we know? We were ignorant kids. All right, baseball I knew. Shas and Paiskim, I was just getting a little taste. Later in life, Baruch Hashem, you know, a little bit you know. But you don't have a Rebbe anymore. He's gone. I would have loved today if I could ask the Rebbe, how do you deal with the Chazon Ish's letter? Look at the implications. If we say that the Lugon was like a Rishon, who says in another 100 years there won't be a big Talmud Chacham who will have the status of the Rambam and totally change the Halacha HaMukubelet B'Yodeinu? Where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line? How much can we innovate? Okay? We have to feel comfortable that the Shabbat we live, the Kashrut we live, the Tarat Mashpacha we live, that this is in consonance with the generations. Those of you that are going to be rabbis and machantchim, what's our basic message? Continuity. Continuity. This is our message. There is no other message. This is what it's all about. This is the miracle of the rebirth after the Holocaust, the miracle of Israel. What I said in class, the weekend paper said, the Marav, evidently someone gave them my share. I couldn't believe what I read. That I made a statement that no matter what happens in the next election, the majority of the Jewish Chavrei Knesset are going to be Shomer Shabbos. Did I say it after class when we were talking about it? Maariv says it's no matter what happens, the majority of the Jewish Chavrei Knesset are going to be Shomrei Shabbos. I mean, Ben-Gurion, Paula is turning over in her grave. He's looking for tefillin. David had a shtickle in his shama. She was anti-religion, something unbelievable. But where do you draw the line? But this is the Chazon Ish. This is the way he felt. Yes, Alan?
The Gra was a singular individual because it was clear that there was no one who came even close to him. The question of what would we do if we have another such individual, halavai, we should have such a question.
Yeah, but you see what you're saying, a Chabadnik would look at you and say right away, look at you askance and say what? The seventh Rebbe was in Shichmo Lamala Mikol Ha'am?
Not the way the Gra was.
No, you're answering that. He'll smack your face. Look at what and the Satmar Rebbe Yoel. They look at Rebbe Yoel. Look at Rebbe Yoel. Look what came out of Rebbe Yoel. Look what's going on today. It's beyond comprehension.
But the second part of it is, I guess greatness of the eye of the beholder, but the Gra was universal. Yeah,
you and I are saying that because of the way we grew up. I don't hear Hasidim saying that.
But
he fought the Baal Tanya. You know that.
But the second thing,
by the way, someone corrected me. I can tell you with websites what the danger is now that I know a little bit about a computer. These guys, what do they call, who send in comments, you don't realize you're talking to human beings, you're talking to the world. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry writes this stupid comment as if he knows everything. Do you know that a guy criticized me for calling in my public talk at YU? I couldn't believe my eyes. I called the Baal Tanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he has a three-part criticism. An idiot, what am I talking about? And then Torah mother's worthless if this is what comes out of it. And then it's not enough for him, he goes after the Rav. My Rebbe, he rips the... I have more material, talk about it. You understand what the criticism is? Because the second Rebbe was the one who moved to Lubavitch. But when you're talking to a popular audience, and the Lubavitcher is not a lecturer, that's a lecturer of Baron Cutler, vis-a-vis the Rav. So I mentioned the Baal Tanya came out at first. That you correct? First Lubavitcher Rebbe? What, am I wrong?
But in the
context
in which you said it, you're absolutely right.
I understand. Exactly.
In the city of
right. It's like someone who'll say today, find, everyone talks Rushan, find Rushan the Rebbe. It's Biyana, it's Vishnitz. But it began in Rushan. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
But my second comment was, in terms of what did the Gra change, there were maybe 20 things that he differed.
So you're quoting Aaron Rekhefet. So when I gave lectures on the Gra, I said, even if he made 1,000 changes, it's all very minor. Whether you say Yeshir Shalyom this way or that way, or 2 matzot or 3 matzot, it's very minor. Whether you're laying or don't lay in Simchat, and you know, the halachic scale, you're dealing with less than 1 out of 10. But God forbid, you can't compare it to Lahavdil Me'alav Adal, to the conservative movement that threw, or David Hartman's latest book that just takes the Torah and throws out the whole concept of halacha that's binding. You follow me? So I agree with you. But nevertheless, I call your attention as intelligent people. What the Chazon Ish is saying has to be discussed further. It can't. He's beating the hell out of his students. On the other hand, there's a Pandora's box he's opening, and my example of a normal Chabad. I'm not talking Messianic. I'm not a big Talmud Chacham, but he'll say, "Well, the seventh Rebbe was a throwback. Where do you draw the line?" And he'll say, "Rekhefet, don't you think the Rav was a throwback? You understand what I'm saying? Where do you draw the line?"
The Rav made such innovations.
The Rav made innovations too, and I can tell you when Dovi Hartman was one of us, I'll tell you a good story. The Rav, I don't know details, maybe Yitzchak knows, he grew up in Boston, I didn't, but we heard rumors that the Rav blew shofar with a stopwatch. Okay? Do you know this? That he blew shofar, some sort of stopwatch, a mechanical thing. But he blew shofar with a stopwatch. So I remember, this is in the 50s, they asked Rabbi David Hartman, who was rabbi in the Bronx, in his shul. I was in that shul with them. We were very close. So they asked David Hartman, what does that mean, the Rav Lushofer? Should all of us blow with a stopwatch? Why don't you blow? So he said, no, but we need in every generation a Gaon and a Tzaddik like the Rav to show us the ultimate fulfillment. But we're simple Jews. We have to do it the way everyone else. That's a beautiful answer. But where do you draw the line? He's first smacking their faces. Watch what happens next. Yes?
What does he mean that the Gaon was a Rishon? I mean, the Chazanish didn't agree with any of the things. I'm sure he had three matzos left to right.
I don't know how many matzot he had, because it's okay, an interesting... you should know, I've said it many times, intellectually the Gaon's absolutely right. There's no concept. Okay. If the Lechem Mishnah, if the Dinam Lechem Noni, it has to be from the Lechem Mishnah.
But
I take three matzot. Why? Because I live the following. What I saw Rebbe do with my own eyes, I do like the Rav. I stand for Kriyat HaTorah, I saw the Rav stand. Thank God, even though I'm on in years, I have no problem standing. It's a pleasure. People say to me, you know, I have the machlokes here, it's right in the Ramah, sure. I know the machlokes, but I do like the Rav does. What I didn't see the Rav do, even if I'm intellectually committed, he's right, I do like Klal Yisrael. I take three matzah. Intellectually, it's all wrong. Mela, I'm not going to burn it like you said. I'm not going to get the henna. It's like the Chafetz Chaim said. Erev Shabbos was Erev Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to learn from noon on. So he said, Ich glaub nicht, dass mir werden Schmitzen für lernen period. I don't believe they're going to give me Malkat and Olam Abba for learning now. So, but it's an interesting phenomenon. And what do you mean like a Rishon? The Gaon, all right, I'm willing to accept it. I'm from Volozhin, I'm from Bris, I'm from the Soloveitchik, the family, these are my mentors. But I throw out the problem because it's a statement that lends itself to endless interpretation and then endless controversy. Who is like a Rishon? And what do you do with a Breslava, Reb Nachman? What do you do with a Chabatnik, a Chabatska? You understand? No, in Belzeger, I don't think there's a problem. They have Rebbeim, but they recognize, I hope they recognize, it's Rebbeim, if Rakefet can teach Torah in Jerusalem in the year 2014, so the Belzer Rebbe can be the Belzer Rebbe, and the Gerer Rebbe of today can be the Gerer Rebbe. Okay? Dai l'chakim v'beremisa. Let me move. Gentlemen, here you come to the heart. Here you come to the heart. What was revealed in the 20th century, you see, Kitvei Yad of the Talmud constantly was showing up. And you already know when you learn the Daf Gemara, you see already Haga'ot on the Daf, the Vilna Shas, and all of you know the Gra, and the Gra had Haga'ot all over. So much so that Professor Liebman cited I don't know if he believed it, but he cited the theory, the Groan in Tagalus. You know, when you study the Gro's life, I spoke about it in great depth, but it's many years ago. The Groan in Tagalus. We don't go into Tagalus today, at least 99% of us don't. But what does it mean, Gullus? You leave your surroundings, you wander around and Valkitzich, you should feel humble, you should feel what it means to be poor, to live where nobody knows you. So the growing into Gullus. And then no one knows why, and then he came back. So a theory, when you follow the cities the Gaon went to, some of them had very big libraries with Kitvei Yad. So the theory is, he was looking at Kitvei Yad to have the proper Talmud text. And Professor Liebman said, and this is what we specialize in at the seminary, that we're following the Gra. Knew what was the big Kitab Yad, the Minchan Talmud. Here they found endless volumes of the Gemara in Ktav Yad. And now you come to the problem, do we correct the Gemara? Do we change the words? How much credence do we give to the Munich Ktav Yad? And this is what evidently the Yehuda boys, or one of them, wrote about, that the Haraya, that you have to have a different approach to Shas and Poskim, is because today we're finding Kitvei Yad. And with the caveat that we're finding, we have the right to amend the text, and ultimately it can have influence on the halachic dynamics, on the halachic process. And this is what the Chazon Ish relates to. And here you come to the heart of the issue. This issue haunts us, because the Chazon Ish himself says, look, anyone who will tell you that there wasn't a mistake made in the Ktitvei Yad is ludicrous. It's not logical. When the Gemara was copied by hand, there had to be mistakes. V'haraya, and we'll come to this, if not today, next week, you take a Chumash text, the Torah text. You can have a Ktav Yad of a Sefer Torah that was checked and rechecked, and Sefer Yireim V'Shleimim, and suddenly you find a word, a letter is missing. A letter is missing. Malay, Chaser, Alachat Kama V'Kama, letters are going to be missing, or letters are going to be put in. And no one can say we don't make mistakes. We're only human beings. The truth of the matter is, all of you are big shots with the computer. All of you know how to type. It's a new generation. No, emails come into YU for me with misspellings, with typos, with words left out. And believe me, they're not doing it on purpose, but that's the nature. I write, I scribble back answers. Time is pressing on me. I reread what I write. I left out a word. I fill it in. Believe me, I've sent on answers without the words right, with typos, with the wrong spelling. We're only humans. Oh, this is now a serious question. Do we have the right to amend the text? And the question is much, much deeper than that. Why? And the Chazon Ish raises these issues black and white. Tell me, when you have a good Sefer Torah, are you going to put it into Geniza? Absolutely not. When you have a Sefer Torah that's Sula, and it's not worth the effort of fixing it, that's what you're going to put into Geniza. Right or wrong? So now you have manuscripts that were nignaz. Remember, these manuscripts, it's not like the church that grabbed manuscripts on purpose and brought them to the Vatican to stop Jewish scholarship. These manuscripts were put into Geniza. Who says they're accurate? Maybe the reason they put them into Geniza was because they had errors in them. So what the Chazon Ish is saying, don't be overwhelmed that you found the manuscript. Go to any Geniza, you'll find mezuzah that are psulat. You'll find parshiyot of tefillin that are psulat. So you're going to find manuscripts on the Gemara? They knew that this scribe didn't do a good job. You know that with the chief rabbinate, the hechsherim they give on tzitzit, on ktivat parshiyot. So those that are out to fight the chief rabbinate will tell you that they're listening to music, rock and roll, while they're writing the parshiyot. How good can they be? An American sofer, he's listening to a baseball game while he's writing the parshiyot. You understand? So these Ktivei Yad, they threw out. Now, by the way, there's a very serious problem, because you're going to come up with Sifrei Torah written by people who don't believe in Torah Shabbat B'Ktav and Revelation and all that goes with it. The Reform Movement has women writing Sifrei Torah today. In 100 years, how will you be able to tell? They're going to have to institute that in every Sefer Torah. There has to be a Yichus Briv in back of the Torah telling you who wrote it, where it was written, who was Magia the Torah. These, all right. And then you're going to discover Sifrei Torah in Geniza 1,000 years from now, with different variations, and before you know it, the Chazon Ish's problems are very, very real. So, tell me, halachically, what would you do if your students came in and they showed you two different textual variations. So, halachically, what do? Acherei rabim lahatot, you would look at more manuscripts and you would pick out the one, if it's a mistake and two, three, four other manuscripts do not have this variation, you're going to go with the ones that seem more solid, that is the majority. And this is probably what went on from time immemorial. We cannot say there weren't questions, there weren't doubts, there weren't variant readings. You cannot say that. Anyone who's learned Rambam, time and again in the Rambam, you know, the Rav used to use the Rambam not just as a posek, but as a mafarish to the Torah, to Shas. I believe Isidore Twesky, his son of a year, Professor Isidore Twesky, makes this point in his monumental volume on the Rambam. But anyone who learns knows right away, sometimes you'll find a totally different psak in the Rambam than what the Gemara says. And you look into the Nosei Kelim, the Kesef Mishnah, right away the Kesef Mishnah will tell you the Rambam had a different girsah in the Gemara. So you see that they were different girsahs is a fact, a reality. But when we hold the Gemara in our hands today, this is the Gemara that was passed on to us by all the previous generations. And if we start playing with the Gemara, we basically undo the Masorah. We undo the tradition. We undo everything that went before us. And it's like a duality here. On one hand, we have to understand there may be variant readings. But on the other hand, what we do and what we teach and what we learn is that which the generation of yesteryear has passed on to us. Now, I have, before I show you the Chazon Ish inside, I have to tell you, this question is not just theory. This question in the entire system of teaching Gemara today, this question comes up, particularly in the state of Israel. And I've addressed it many times. When do you start learning Gemara? I started learning Gemara, I was maybe fifth grade. I look back in joy that I began that young and I had a good Rebbe. I write about it in Washington. I can tell you I didn't write such strong words. I can tell you the Rebbe who introduced me to Gemara was a Machalel Shabbos. These people were teaching, this is BS, before the end of World War II. And most of the teachers in the day schools in New York City, they were low yitzlachtnim who tried to make a living as selling insurance, owning a store. They went bankrupt. They wound up teaching. Some of them knew. They learned in Europe. And this Rebbe, I just see him in front of me smiling, was a big Zionist. He had a Hebraized name. And he taught us Gemara. And remember, I write about what Joe Walcott versus Joe Lewis, a boxing match, a Bayer versus Rava. So you begin. And then the Shanghai crowd, 7th grade, I had Rebbe Geshen Yankelevich, 8th grade, I had Rebbe Chanuk Fishman. And then you go on to YU. And never, ever did the question of a scientific approach come up. Then you go to graduate school. Go to graduate school, they're already... You get involved with a scientific approach. The word they use, revadim in Hebrew, various layers, correct readings. Fine, I didn't pursue it. I was more interested in Jewish history. But I have to say, the scientific approach, very fascinating, the questions they raise. I appreciate the Tosef. I appreciate Professor Liebman's work on the Tosefta is overwhelming. Professor Mirsky's work on the Shi'iltot. I have appreciation. The Diktike Sofrim, Rabinovich. I have appreciation for all this. But, okay, but the question comes up. How do you teach a 13-year-old kid? In the state of Israel, out of Bar Ilan, there's some, I know them, the American professors. They want to introduce in Israel that we should teach Ravadim. In other words, what does Ravadim mean? That a kid should understand the Gemara is written chronologically, many different layers. You have to separate them You have to understand the chronological development. You're taking a kid, you get involved, variant readings. And I want to tell you, this is all beautiful, but not for a kid. Before you can begin going into the scientific approach, if you wish, you have to be a Bucky and Shas and Paiskim. You have to be a big Talmud Chacham. You're not going to learn. I give you a very simple example. I had a classmate, Rabbi Harris Gedalia Yitzchak. Remember Harris?
Yes.
Okay. So he married Judy Bentheim.
With an I.
What, excuse me?
Judy with an I.
Judy with an I. Okay. married Judy Bentheim. And I cannot tell you who the Bentheims are and were. It's Tzadike Yisod Olam. I can tell you at their marriage, another classmate of us from Williamsburg, Rabbi Wulicki, his car was robbed while the marriage took place. You got to know what New York was like, what New York still may be like. So Mr. Bentheim heard about it, and he contacted Rabbi Wulicki. Did you get back? And he says, no, the insurance will only cover damage to the car. It's not going to cover what was in the car. He said, how much did you lose? He said, well, they took this, that, let's say $200. Mr. Bentheim wrote him a check. He shouldn't have a bad memory of the wedding. And I can tell you more stories of the Tzidka. What a family. So Harris Gedalia could do what none of us could do. He could, a Talmud of the Rav, he's now going to go around the world and learn. So he goes to Jews College, comes to Hebrew U, studies with Professor Shraga Abramson, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. That was a chavrusa of Reb David Lifshitz in Reb David's in Grodno Yeshiva yet. And Reb Shraga, I mean, this was a world famous scientific Jewish scholar, Gaon Adir. His son-in-law is from this kollel, married his daughter. Daughter was a classmate of my daughter's. So I asked Harris, you can ask Harris, I think the Masechet he studied was Chagiga or Horiyah. There was not a yeshivish Masechet. So I asked him, what was it like to study under Professor Abramson? So he says, let me tell you, Ani. It was unbelievable what we did with the text, how we reconstructed the text, how we went into manuscripts, but I don't know one word of the Gemara. You follow? It was a very insightful answer. So I'm not opposed, but first give a kid Shas and Paiskim. If you'll weiter, he wants to go further, fine. When you have Shas and Paiskim under your skin. So, the Chazon Ish relates to this problem. And he says, you feel that the manuscripts of the Kitvayat Minchin, so you know what you're saying? Kol Chachmei Chador Mizman HaRishonim Ad Achshav Kulam Lo Amdu Al HaEmet Mipnei Shesofer Chata'a V'hosif d'barim b'gemara b'libo v'chikshil et kol ha-chachamim. Do you understand what you're saying? The Chazon Ish says to them that you're telling me that there's a new gemara, a new reading, a new concept, and because one sofer copying it over made a mistake and didn't copy it properly, all the Rishonim wind up not knowing what they're talking about. All the Chachamim wind up not knowing what they're talking about. And the Chazon Ish says, Vani lo mehem, v'lo mehamoneihem. I'm not part of that crowd. Absolutely not. Kit ve'yad, shehaya b'yad ha-Rishonim zal, masru nafsham aleihem. They gave their life to retain a proper reading. And here are words that are unbelievable. V'hashgachato yitbarach, shelo tishakach Torah miYisrael, higinu aleihem. That's the key concept here. Hashgacha pratit. And you're hearing it from the Chazon Ish. I want to tell you, I'll show you sources. The Babacher Rebbe said the same thing. Moriu Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik said exactly the same thing. There's a hashgacha pratit. We're here. It's unbelievable at times. at my mother's first yard site when we were gathered around the kever. And you got to remember, her great-grandchildren already, many of them really didn't know her. They're total Israelis. And I said, my mother, one little act that she did sent me to Salanta. Out of that act, in my immediate family, there are tens and tens and tens and tens, maybe over 100 Shomrei Torah mitzvah today. One little act. It's Hashgacha Pratit. How else can you explain it? And the fact that all look at the generation that I have lived through. Survivors who I went to school with. And look what I just told you 5 minutes ago. The majority of the Chavrei Knesset who are Jewish are going to be Shomrei Shabbos. No matter who wins, no matter what the percentage is, we're talking about the Haredi parties, we're talking about the Maftal and Ichud Lumi, we're talking about the Avodah, we're talking about the Likud, we're talking about Tzipi Livni with Lazar Stern. All right, we can differ with Major General Stern 1,000 times. He once stopped that Arminian at the Koto a few times. Bobby, we put guards around him because the people were angry. You know, the usual story, that the Koto beat up another Jew. You follow? So we put guards around him. We told him, you just stop and don't worry, we're protecting you. And, you know, he has many friends. Among them, a Talmud of mine is his best friend, Bini Shadovsky, Bini Shalev today. So he knows American mentality. He understands our approach. But we have to understand. How do you explain it? Hashgacha Pratit. I remember when I came in Aliyah, Rav Hutton was telling me a story. My revered neighbor, Rav Yeshua Hutton, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Yehuda Tzvi Cook's brother-in-law, was married to his sister, and he was married to Batsheva Soloveitchik Hutton B'Zivik Sheni. And Rav Hutton was telling me, this must be 70, 71, there was a dinner of very wealthy entrepreneurs. And he knew one family were from, and they couldn't eat at the dinner here in Israel, a treif there in a Herzliya Pituach, you know. Today, you wouldn't have, the wealthiest Jews in Israel are from Jews. Think for a minute what's happened here. This couldn't happen today. Nope, you can say it's chance, development. I say it's Mesirat Nefesh and Hashgacha Pratit. And I hope my grandson that I debated with on cancer research, vis-a-vis being a Rebbe, I hope one day he'll understand his grandfather well. Okay? And then he says, and he says, then when they printed the Gemara, Gedolei Yisrael, look, I don't know how to say it in English, to purify it. How would you say it? Maim Skukim.
Clarify.
Purify. Here we use purified water. What they did to see that the text was correct. And then he says, and if in occasion there was a contradiction, they put it to a vote. Two against one. They took the two, not the one. And who knows if the Kitveyat Minchin is not from that one that was negated, that was voted out of existence. Maybe they knew that this Kitveyat Levilti Muduk Dak Ubechol Ofen, his words are very strong, Hu Batel Kecheres HaNishpa Neged HaGirsa HaMekubelet, that this variant reading is nullified. What counts is that which the tradition, the Kabbalah, the Mesorah, has passed on to us. And just because the sofa made a mistake and left out a few words, and the Chazon says, and we know this can happen, but Nivnen Migdalim, and we're going to build castles of explanation because a sofa left out a few words. And then he says, Avokishano Samchima la Kabbalah, Torah, Rashi, Tosfot, the Kolach HaChamim, Vadai Hi HaTorah. That when you depend upon the Kabbalah, this certainly is correct. Manuscripts can be wrong. And here the Chazon Ish, this is the most famous sentence, Kamat Shaloda Iti Tuelet, Lahagia El Ha'emet, Al Yedei Hagia Sa'ot, Shenech Pasim Mehaganisat. Rakulam Tuelet Lavot Mishpat, Ula Kemet Ha'emet, Ura'i Hulig Nogzam, Shecha Hepsei Yoter Al Hascha. And this is the Chazon Ish, la halacha, that I see no value. What are we looking for manuscripts? What are we hunting? What are we searching? What are we begging the Vatican? Let us in. Leave them stay where they are. Hepsei yoter al hascha. And what a letter. Chazon Ish, and you have to understand, Chazon Ish's influence went way beyond little Bnei Brak. Chazon Ish was the Chazon Ish. His influence, you all know that with the international dateline, I lectured on it maybe a decade and a half ago, but with the dateline. People refused to go to Japan for fear of having the problem of how to observe Yom Kippur and Sukkot when they were running away from Hitler. Why? Because of the Chazon Ish. His opinion was very powerful. You come to the Shemitah, all of Poli, Agudat Yisrael, the kibbutzim, shalavim, chafetz chayim, everything is based upon Piskei Chazon Ish. Until today. And in general, with Otzer Beit Din, all that's happening with the swing to the right, call it, or the swing to be more medakdeik, you'll see a year from now is a Shemitah year, a year and a half from now is a Shemitah year. You'll see how the Chazon Ish comes to the fore once again. And the Chazon Ish in learning, how many shiurim have been said, how many times has he quoted, and very insightful. Very modern as well. Very caught up with the nascent state of Israel. This is the Chazon Ish. If I can quote Rabbi Yehuda Cooperman, I remember him saying in the 70s that if the Chazon Ish applied to get into the Kollel Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak today, he would not be accepted. Quote, end quote. Rabbi Koopman saying it. So you see, it's not don't take the Chazon Ish, what's going on in Bnei Brak with the draft and Rabbi Steinman and Rabbi Urbach and the inner machloket now, what's going on, that's not the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish, I think Rakefet hit the nail on the head. Chazon Ish equals Poli Agudat Yisrael. Poli Agudat doesn't exist today because their children either went right or went left. But Poli Agudat does not exist. But the Chazon Ish, he was caught up, total commitment to halacha, modern day Israel, as it's developing. Students have gathered around him. It's sort of like the Vilna Gaon. It's sort of like the Briska Rav. It's not a yeshiva, it's not a mass public that can learn with him, but it's the chosen few. And here you have the Yehuda brothers who wind up in university and have this conflict, and they turn to their Rebbe, and their Rebbe is Chad Mashma'i in his answer. One more brief tshuva, we're closing shop for today. Where are you going to be next week?
Back in America.
You're going to be back in Cleveland when I'm talking only about Cleveland next week. Only Cleveland.
Ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Did Chazon Ish feel that proponents of New Gerses were just mistaken, or did he actually question their motivation?
Well, you're asking a good question, because between the lines it seems he's worried about what that can lead to. I would imagine that was part of it. I would imagine so. You'll see when we get to Professor Yehuda's letter to me. It's unbelievable, and his command of English is unbelievable as it comes to the fore in this letter. I want to quote one more letter from the Chazon Ish that's very brief, but essentially summarizes everything. It's in Chelik Sheni of Kovetz Igrot Chazonish, also put out by Rav Shmuel Greinemann. It is letter Chaf Gimel 23. And again, we don't know who it's to, but he's writing to a Talmud, I got your letter, I don't see anything new, I don't like to look at these photographs of new Kitvei Yad, we don't know who wrote them, and who the sofer was, and we all know that in Halacha, Hadava Yadu B'Nyanei Halacha, Shelo Lismoch Al Bei Al Mitziyot Chadashot, Rak Al Sifrei HaPoskim, Shenimsaru Meidor Lador below Hepsek. And again, right on, he tells this person who's writing to him, and I don't have to tell you, they started photographing today at a Hebrew university. They have photographs, it's computerized, of every Ktav Yad available at any library in the world. Today, you can go on to the computer and get to Cambridge, and they're starting to put the entire Genizer in Cambridge on a computer program accessible to anyone in the world who wants to download it. I have to say it's overwhelming to me what a computer can do. Ephraim gave me a source, and the whole book is on the computer. I know Alexander Dushkin. He's a Talmud of Bendeley. I'll talk about him tomorrow. But it's unbelievable. But he doesn't want to look at it. Ain't it's not worth it. It's not something that was masur tlas ledova dova. What Joey just said, it's alluded to. The next line: Yesh oldavarim avil eni motzei toelit laharich. Yes, there's more I can talk about, but there's no need to go into more detail. Okay, so we've just started the Chazon Ish. As I said, next week is very special because it's a private letter, and you'll see this professor, Tzvi Yehuda's command of English, his ability to convey ideas, it's way beyond my ability in English, and as far as I know, he was not the Native American, or it's not his native language. So let me reiterate, what did we do today? We raised the issue of the Ramah, where the Ramah says that if you find the Ktav Yad, it can no longer be said that Halacha Kabat Ra'i, you may have to revise your thinking. The Rishonim did not see the Ktav Yad, the Achronim did not see the Ktav Yad. And here you see the Chazon Ish takes a totally different approach. We get involved with the Vilna Gaon, we get involved with the Chazon Ish's concept of a throwback, and it is an interesting open question that has tremendous implication. I don't want to minimize the implications, because if we can say the Vilna Gaon, and a Chassid, I once debated, dialogued with a Chassid, a big Talmud Chacham, he said to me, just as you think the Vilna Gaon is a throwback, the Baal Tanya was a throwback. The Seventh Rebbe was a throwback. Nu ein l'dav esof, if we talk like that. It's an interesting question. I don't have a black and white answer. I wish I could discuss it with Mori Rebbe, you know, the Rav. I had confidence. It's not just that how much he knew, but it's that he knew my world. We were in the same world. You understand? That's very important. Rebbe was in, I was not in his world. When I was a student, I didn't understand him entirely. Over the years, I came to understand the world he was in. It's the world I'm in. So we get to know each other, but unfortunately, it's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. I think it's Sanhedrin. Kalef hamalakeitmen hayam, like a shofaret, you're sticking a machol. So how much do you get out of a Rebbe? And then we have to go further on our own. I want to show you, there's an amazing article that just was sent to me today, or was just printed out today, from already, or the article appeared on January 2nd on Ynet, that's the Yediot Ahronot. It's about women and their mastery of Shasim Paiskim. And it's entitled Yentl 2013. Im Heim Hayu Gevarim, Heim Hayu Rabbanim. Now, I want to tell you what's very nice about the article. They interview these women who are learned and knowledgeable, and they're not feminist. In other words, there's no enmity here towards the rabbinate, and there's no enmity, we're second-class citizens, but we have a right to learn. They quote the Chafetz Chaim, what I've quoted so many times, and once he opened the door, so every generation opens the door a little bit more in learning. But these women, which, thank God, because I always said, the more you teach a woman, the more she'll understand. We're men and women, and we each have our place before the Ribbono Shel Olam. If anyone's interested, it's yours for the asking. Here's an article that everyone is talking about. It's on outreach, and it created a tremendous discussion. It involves Neeli Yalef, I think it's called, and a whole convention was held. And what are we doing wrong in Kirov? It deals with the basic issue of why kids can become frum and then half a year later, throw it away. If anyone is interested, this article is worth reading if you're in outreach. And I hope all my students listening who are in outreach, particularly the Toronto crowd, I hope that you have seen this article. My dear students, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, we have Zechana Pela Yov Koach. We're going into the history of where we are sitting. We will be there, eyewitnesses. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.
I still don't understand the Hasidic comment about the Quran. Because I